Okay, report and possible discussion on pension advisory board by RBC Institutional Consulting Group.
John was here last time. We just brought John on as our pension advisor, and this is his report here for this quarter. Pass out, this is.
I'll just sit down here in the light of fire.
That's a mistake.
Because I take fiduciary responsibility very seriously. It is a good job. Things we've talked about a lot.
You ready?
Okay.
Well, first off, I think the discussion up to this point has been very much on point, and there are really not any easy answers to all these questions. I think, you know, maybe we can help a little bit different spin on it, and, you know, maybe even help us have a better feel when we walk out here as to direction. But what we've got here, first off, is our analysis of your investment report as of the end of June. Now, I think it's kind of helpful to stop and think about the markets and, you know, where they were and what's happened in the last quarter. It's really hard to believe that this was the best quarter since 1998. And you say, wow. And we had Chrysler and GM go bankrupt. We had, you know, home prices still falling, unemployment at a 25-plus year high. But I think it looks like some of the government programs have started to see that they have been effective. We've started to see that they've been effective. But what was mentioned earlier by BlackRock, what we saw in the market was a lot of the companies, a lot of the sectors that did very well were the ones that people thought might not be around. You know, there was that going concern effect, and that they were concerned that a lot of these companies may not be around. And those were the ones that bounced back the most. And quite frankly, I think when we listened to what BlackRock had to say, that was an impact on their overall portfolio. You know, one example is if you looked at the financials from the low of March 10th through the end of the quarter, just the financials in the S&P were up over 90% in that little over a month period, over a quarter period. What we'll do is just go through and talk a little bit about your portfolio, and then we'll talk more about planning and where we want to go from here. Page 3 addresses the markets for the quarter and for the 12 months, and as you can see, the quarter was great, but for a year, it was awful. And the S&P 500, where most of our equities are, and something that's similar to that, you know, although it was up 16% for the quarter, over a 12-month period, it was down 26.
You know what I'm most interested in is next quarter. So pull out your crystal ball and tell us.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, it is feeling a lot better, isn't it?
It is.
It is true that we're basically an S&P 500 investment. We don't have any really foreign value, any of those other assets.
No, we don't. And we look, we really, and that's something that we're talking about and something we're going to talk about. Because our portfolio is large cap domestic.
I heard you say 40 names, maybe?
I think it's like a little less than 60, but.
Okay.
And the names, you'd recognize them all. And if you skip over to page 6, We can look at our portfolio as of the end of June, and, you know, we're getting very close to our 60-40 ratio, and as was said, you know, that is, that really comes from the market rebalancing for us. It rebalanced the other way, and then it's rebalanced going back up in the last little over a quarter. Also, we've seen our overall portfolio, which is a little above $20 million the end of June, gain almost $1 million in that 90-day period.
Now, yes. Something I'm curious of when you talk about it rebalanced based on the market, and of course I was getting to it a while ago. If we had taken some fixed income, moved it over in the stocks when they were down, would we not have bounced more than $1 million?
Sure.
And yeah. And so why did we not do that?
Well, again, I can't answer exactly that. Like Doug, I'm fairly new on board here, so I'm not really sure what kind of mandate.
And I realize I should have asked that to BlackRock a while ago.
But also, if we had...
And that's hindsight.
No, it's hindsight, but it's also policy. It's a question of how much, you know, if we have a 60-40 mix, how much tolerance do we want to give on either side of that? And I will say this, in their defense, there were a lot of boards that said, okay, I know we're supposed to rebalance, but let's don't do it just yet. And again, it was the fear effect at the bottom. And everybody thought, it felt like everybody was going to go kaput. And when you saw government bonds being basically the only aspect of the market that had positive returns last year, you kind of scratch your head and you say, why should these high grade investment grade corporate bonds be yielding 5% plus more than government bonds when they normally yield, you know, 1.5% more? It was fear. But had we rebalanced? Yes. And really, historically, rebalancing works to your advantage. You know, it's not just putting money into the asset when it's down, but it's taking money away from it when it's up. It's working against fear and greed. It's almost putting on blinders and saying, okay, we're trusting our instruments. We're flying into the fog, and the instruments tell us that this is really what we ought to be doing, and we have to do it. Again, on page 7, you can see what the returns have been. And, you know, returns for the quarter. And as BlackRock said, the quarter, they underperformed, and most of that underperformance came via their equities. And we saw that in a lot of investment managers that are managing a portfolio that really has a very fundamental aspect to it, that they're really looking for companies that have positive earnings and companies that are growing in a positive manner, not just buying something that is quote unquote of value, almost an asset play. And it really worked against companies doing that kind of, making those kinds of investments. However, skip on over to page 9 and let's just talk about their overall performance for a minute. And page 9 is the portfolio performance, total portfolio performance for our fund. And we're looking at it from a couple of perspectives, and I think this is what's helpful, is if you look at the top of this page, we're seeing a quarter, year-to-date, 1, 3, and 5-year periods. The quarter, you can see that we were up 6.7%. Right below it, we say 60% S&P 500, 40% the BarCap US Ag, which is a little bit different benchmark than that long one that they were using, but it's pretty much in line. It says that, you know, that outperformed. However, if you start to go out over a year, at the 1 year period, you can see actually outperformance. And at 5 years, the performance of 2.8% versus the index of 0.9. Now, again, that's not...
That's really encouraging.
The pond you're fishing in, you did real well, but you didn't make nearly enough money to fund your pension plan. Not many people did during that period of time. And we'll talk a little bit more about this period of time we've been in and how bad and how unusually bad it's been. At the bottom section of that chart, though, looks at peer groups. And here we're looking at the median managers. We're looking at managers that are really balanced funds that are running something like this 60-40 mix. And you can see how you have performed relative to, again, the median or average balanced fund. And again, very, very competitively over this period of time. And in fact, if you look at those numbers at the very bottom where it says percentile rank, what you'd like to see is a number that is 50 or below. In other words, it says we did better than average, better than the median manager. The quarter and the year to date, absolutely not. But when you go out longer periods of time, those returns have been very good.
The median is 60-40. Is that what you're saying?
The median is a balanced manager. The 60-40, when you're holding it exactly at 60-40, is this index here. The median is a peer group of balanced funds that are of moderate risk,
okay,
which is how you, I think, define what we're doing.
When you said index funds, John, I'm missing you. What am I not seeing?
Okay.
It's the second line.
That's the second line. That's
so that's S&P.
S&P 500 and the BarCap Ag. So we're using an index, and then we're looking at peer groups.
Okay, gotcha.
For
sorry.
Your total fund. And then let's just skip over and talk a little bit about your equity portfolio.
And before you get off that page, though, you said, you know, short-term it's not been as good, long-term it's been good. The fact you made that statement, I was waiting for you to say, and so BlackRock has really done a good job for you. BlackRock is not doing real good, right? I mean...
BlackRock has done a good job for their mandate.
Okay.
And I think that's part of it. Their mandate is to manage a large cap core equity portfolio and a fixed income portfolio, and for that mandate they have done a good job.
Okay.
The market's done a lot worse for many others, in other words, than our.
Others that had the same mandate. Yeah.
Yes.
But I think that the question is, what should the mandate be? Do we want to do something?
Well, that's what I thought you were leading to, and that's why I wanted to.
That's kind of where we're going, but no.
Okay, I'm pages ahead of you then.
No. In their total portfolio, which is, I guess, where the rubber meets the road finally, the total balanced portfolio has done well. Over 5 years, you fell into the seventh percentile of balanced funds. So, you know, you had very few that outperformed you. Let's talk a little bit about the equity portfolio, because the equity portfolio, if we're going to get 7.5%, it's got to come from there. It's not going to come from bonds, or at least not very often. The way our portfolio is structured, I certainly wouldn't expect it to be. The equity portfolio is, again, a very large cap portfolio. If you just look at the names in the portfolio, the top 10, which is about 30% of the portfolio, and that's generally what you'd see. Mm-hmm. When I think somebody asked how many names, and there were 59 names in the portfolio as of the end of June. you can see the average cap of these securities is, you know, over 70 billion. So these are really the giants. But if we went and looked at these names, you know, they held up on a relative basis very well in 2008 and the first part of 2009. But then the market that we were in this last quarter, they didn't participate. They didn't get hammered, but they didn't participate. You know, Exxon, I think for the quarter was actually down a point or two, but still it had held up very well. And if you go through there and look, even in the top 10, there's not any of the commercial banks that had gotten beaten down so badly that came back. I think it's probably helpful to skip over to page 13 and talk about the equity portfolio. And what we have seen in the equity portfolio, you know, you've seen good performance now running against a universe of large cap managers. I'm on page 13. Large cap blend over a 5-year period, we certainly outperformed. Now, here you can see that the overall, although we've performed in the 21st percentile, that's certainly very good. You can see that the fixed income management of BlackRock added a great deal in last year and has actually continued to help in this last year. I'm going to skip on over and let's just talk a little bit about going forward and trying to get some ideas.
Well, before you leave 13, and let me go back to 13 and the bottom of the page down there.
Yes.
When I'm looking at 2004, 10.5%, 2005, 14.2%, 2006, 14.4%, 2007, 7.0%. So we practically every year exceeded the 7.5 projection until we hit 2008, which wiped all of that out.
And now that's just the equity. That's just 60% of your fund. That's
right.
Okay.
But where I'm trying to get, you know, of course, you always hear the thing: past performance is not a prediction of future performance. But what I'm trying to look at is, okay, 2008 and early 2009 has hit. Mm-hmm. And so are we going, or you think we're going back to the things where we're at 7.5 or above in the future?
I think a 7.5% assumption is reasonable. I don't think, and as I go through here, I don't think it's overly optimistic, nor do I think it's overly pessimistic. And I think you'll see as we go through here and talk about it, it's achievable. You could certainly make a case that it could be a little bit low, and you could also make a case that it could be a little bit high. And I'm not answering your question, but I think as you see this, as we go through it, you'll understand what I'm saying.
Well, which office are you running for?
Yeah. Well, and while ago you made the comment
the door in a minute.
Right. The government stimulus has begun to kick in and help the thing. The thing that scares the hell out of me is the fact that the government stimulus is going to kick in and inflation is going to kick in, and that changes all the dynamics.
It does.
And so I think as we look at this, all of that has to be looked at.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. Skip over to the blue sheet, and let's just have a discussion now.
Rory?
I went to, I just put in the two books, I went right past the blue sheet. I went from, like, perfect landscape. Let's just talk about where we are and what this pool is. Currently, the assets, the total pool, has defined benefit assets, which we spent most of the time talking about today, and it has defined contribution assets in it. You know, the outcomes in the DB, in the defined benefit plan, out, impact the Brazos River Authority. We've decided that, if it's really positive, if we earn 12% or 15%, it's going to reduce our contributions. If we earn zero, it's going to increase our contributions. But the entity it impacts is Brazos River Authority. The outcomes in the DC plan, though, impact the individual. And each individual has different, not only in the DC, but the DV plan, we're talking about different needs, different risk tolerances, and different time horizons. So there's a disconnect in goals and objectives of these two parties that are in that same pool of assets. And the solution, of course, is separating the defined benefit and the defined contribution assets. And that's what's happening right now.
That's right.
John, you want to?
Yes, we're currently in the process, and actually Doug Anderson's group is helping us with splitting the plan document, as John said, which has both the DB and DC elements embedded, split that into, if you will, two documents, amended, where we'll have a DB plan and a DC plan. And pursuant to prior committee action a couple years ago, where they believe that was the approach to take, we're following through with that. And then once we have those two plans split and the assets split, then the decision as to what to do with the DC. We have talked about terminating the DC plan and returning those assets to the employees is one approach. This will all come back to the committee and final for your final approval. But at the very least, we would set up the DC plan in a way where the employees would have investment responsibilities for those monies, because of course that will be the result of that will be so that's why we're splitting them, is to be able to allow for that, and ultimately perhaps to terminate seems to make sense, because otherwise why do you continue to administer, especially if it's a frozen plan and there's no new monies going into it and things like that, and you let them roll that out.
The employees participate in the state sponsored retirement plan now, is that
yes?
Yes. So there are there any contributions going to the DC plan now?
No, sir. And there haven't been since late 2007.
Okay.
It's been almost 2 years now that we froze this plan, and there have been no contributions except what the BRA has to put in for the DB portion.
What is the percentage of that $19 million is DC benefits and DB benefits?
Currently, it is about between $2 and $3 million of that. Of that 19 million, so it's that is the DC portion of it. Okay, so if you back at we've been talking about all different dates in this meeting. We've jumped around from March 1st to May and stuff. But the bottom line is the DC benefits is about, with some gains, it's about $2.5 to $3 million the DC, and the rest, $16 or $17 million or so, $17 million plus now, is the DB. So the DB is the vast majority of it.
Are the DC contributions included in the actuarial studies that we're doing?
No. The DC has nothing to do with the actuarial studies. The numbers that Doug was talking about was just the DB assets. He was just using the DB assets.
$16 million.
The $16.5 million. Okay. The actual asset value of March 1st, 2009.
Okay.
But the numbers that Merrill Lynch, the numbers that Merrill talks about, we can go back, I can show you in the reports, includes both of those, because they invest and manage all of it. So the numbers, those numbers include the assets, but for the actuarial, it's just the DB.
And if I understand, since it's frozen, you're talking about just distributing, so they would be rolling it over into individual IRAs for them
yes,
to
sir.
Manage?
Yes, sir. It would be their authority. We would help. There'd be a lot of education and stuff, and hopefully rolling that out, and they could roll it into IRAs and do with whatever. Effectively get responsibility for the ongoing management of that themselves, since it's really their assets, if you will. But that's how we're moving forward, and in future meetings we'll be bringing it up.
Okay. let's kind of now just shifts over to the DB plan. But I think it's helpful to kind of understand where we are and how the assets are currently allocated. The investment policy that we have right now, I'm on the second page of the second part of the handout, of course, is written for this page. It is written for both defined benefit and defined contribution assets, which, you know, from my perspective, I don't think meets the objectives. And truthfully, the overall investment policy is about, I'd say it's probably 12, 13 years old.
Yes, it was, I've got a copy of it right here. It's adopted in January of 1996.
Okay. There's no major flaws, except it is long, it's cumbersome, and it really was built to cover two different types of assets. I really think, and more I look at it as opposed to going back and trying to put together a patchwork, it's better just to redraft a policy strictly for the defined benefit assets. You know, we've got, and what's going to happen with the defined contribution, especially if they're given to the participants,
it
goes away. And, you know, how fast that happens,
we're trying to.
It's up to attorneys and all that.
You have to give them a year. That's what most plans do.
That's right.
They're gone.
At last meeting, we talked about, you know, expanding the asset classes, and I think that's something that's already come up and we've talked about today before I even sat in this chair. When we talked about, you know, adding international, we talked about adding small cap, and we're also talking about developing an asset allocation to meet that 7.5% return. And so the things that we need to do is we need to really have a pretty good timeline as to how this committee can operate, or if we're going to work with staff and develop recommendations and come to you. I'd like some direction as we go through here, but I want to give you a spirit of what you're going to be seeing. We will now take the information that we've gotten from Doug and more fully develop an asset allocation policy, really taking into consideration the liabilities. And at the same time, I think we need to be looking at a search for small cap and for international managers so that we can, you know, develop the policy, which would include using those asset classes, and have the searches completed very close to the same time so we can get this implemented and be moving forward. I don't think there's a there's not a sense of urgency that has to be done. There's nothing wrong, but just to move forward and get to a new policy. Page 4 just addresses where we are right now. And at the top of the page, you know, we've got 60% of our assets in large cap domestic equities. We've got 40% in fixed income, and that's sort of where we stay. And then I said, just for illustrative purposes, let's talk about what happens if we were to add the asset classes that we talked about last time, which would be small cap equity, and that'd be domestic equity, and then international equity. And we're not decreasing the fixed income. You know, part of what we're trying to do is improve returns, but also we're pretty sensitive to volatility. We've got a long time horizon, but it's a closed plan, so that time horizon keeps shortening every day. And so I'm not in favor personally of taking on a lot more risk from that perspective.
But it is a little bit more risk.
Yeah, but about what I'm saying, yes, it is more risk adding these asset classes to a degree. As you'll see,
the expected return should be
per unit of risk, the return per unit of risk will be equal to. But what I was really referring to, taking on more risk by reducing fixed income. I'm not sure that I would recommend that, but I'm not sure that that's where this committee wants to go.
Okay.
The next page is just something I threw in here simply because I think sometimes it's helpful to see. You can't really predict what's going to happen from year to year. I mean, it's very, very random. But the way you, I guess you'd say, the way you do the best is have a very broadly diversified portfolio. We have a broadly diversified large cap domestic equity portfolio, but there's a lot of asset classes, as you can see on here, that we don't have.
Autos? It's a good thing we didn't have autos, isn't it?
Well, yeah. If you go to page six, and the thing that I think sort of jumps off the page to me here is we're looking at returns for large cap, the S&P 500, small cap would be the Russell 2000, the EAFE is international, and then the bar cap is bonds. If you go all the way out in that top area for 10 years, looking at the graph at the bottom, or the table at the bottom, for the last 10 years, large cap domestic equity is negative. So where we thought we would be having positive returns to get us to that 7.5% has actually been negative. So that is really important against us. Down below, I just wanted to show you how random, again, we've already talked about the randomness, but we show just the highlighted which areas have actually done the best. And, you know, quite frankly, had we had a little international in the last 10 years, it would have clearly helped our overall portfolio, although last year it would have been a bigger drag. The next page, I'm talking about assumptions, and this is where it gets kind of tricky because, as you said, or as Doug said to you, he's making certain return assumptions, and then he's also, you know, he looks to the board for guidance, but there's got to be some reasonableness to those assumptions. If you look at just using these assumptions, and these aren't overly optimistic, nor are they overly pessimistic. I'd say, if anything, they might have, I'd say they're really pretty much in the middle. They could be a little bit on the high side, but let's just kind of go through it and talk about what these tell us. You know, we said large cap equities, and here we're looking at, you know, we're looking at 10-year assumptions. And again, the one thing that we know about these assumptions in 10 years, they could be wrong. But I think using historical numbers, using where we are today, it gives us an idea. Basically, what we're saying is the equity, large cap equity at 9%, the small cap should deliver a higher return, and international, generally a slightly higher return. A fixed income is probably more of a stretch than the other, but I think it's certainly a reasonable number if you're talking about a diversified portfolio. Skip page 8, which just talks about correlations, how when one goes up, the other goes down, and go to page 9. And page 9 tells us the probability of making the 7.5% return. And in either one of those cases, it is very, very close. I mean, you're really not even making it on those numbers. And if you go over to page 10, I know you're kind of running down, I believe you're talking. Page 10 addresses I think, Peter, what you said, what kind of return and standard deviation would we expect from a portfolio? And again, this isn't a recommended portfolio as much as this is illustrative just for talking, so that you can kind of put into perspective that there's not a panacea out there.
Yeah, what do you recommend, the 10%, 10%, and break out of the large cap?
I recommend that we do break out the large cap, clearly. And I think we have to have international. I think we have to have some small cap in there, small to mid cap in there. But what I want to do is tie that back to what we've got from the actuary and just make it a little more formal and structured. I think what we're going to see, it's going to be something like that.
Similar to what?
Yeah, it'd be similar to that.
And I think the right small caps, it could be a little positive impact.
Oh, well,
yeah. An index on small caps.
Yeah.
It's safer.
Well,
did you take it and maybe for the last 10 years back tested, or however long you can go back to BlackRock, back tested it again, what would have happened had we been invested in a
index
similar to what you suggested?
Oh, if we had had a portfolio that had small cap and had international and rebalanced, and I think that's the key. But clearly, I mean, again, it's 20/20 hindsight, and you would have done better. But that's 20/20 hindsight. But you'd find very few 10-year periods that you wouldn't have done better.
Just you roll them
because of the diversification that you receive. There's not any, you know, every asset class is going to have its time in the sun, and by being there and being able to take advantage of that time in the sun. And when it, you know, if we say we want 10% in small cap, and we have one of these years where small caps are up 50%, and it happens, and that, you know, that drives us the 10% up to 13-14% of the portfolio, and you take money off the table.
Can you come to this group with a recommendation and some back testing as to what allocation we might have considered or should consider?
It's better to talk about what we should consider.
Yeah,
yes, that's what we'd like to do. And again, how do we want to do that, and how do you want us to, I would think you'd want us to work with staff and develop the recommendation and then come to you.
Now, the thing is you skipped past one comment a while ago you made.
You shouldn't hang on every word I say.
But you said, and we should rebalance. And that goes back to my question a while ago, is my experience in this stuff has been the rebalancing is something that you do, because most of the time that's always the right thing as you look back. And as I get to the 60-40, why didn't we rebalance if we would have taken more of the advantage of the bounce? What you're saying is the more we spread the asset allocation, the more it's mandatory that we rebalance on a very often time.
We should rebalance, and the rebalancing is opposed to setting on a time period. We would rebalance based upon bands, and if we got outside the band, we'd rebalance, or if we had cash flow into or out of the pool, we'd rebalance using that. In other words, for our normal monthly payroll, we would take it from the asset class that's basically the furthest above.
Yeah, but of course, this doesn't have a monthly payroll. The only income on this DB is going to be our annual amount, right?
No. We've got monthly income, but we've got to pay the retirees.
Yeah, retiree payments.
Got money coming out.
Yeah.
Okay. So where we're taking the money out?
That's
what
right.
You're saying. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, the only thing I'd like to make a principle statement, an investment principle statement, and that is, let's always be careful when you're in a market like we're in to modify an otherwise good policy to stretch for yield. And wouldn't you say that's a good principle statement?
Most definitely.
And while we are doing exactly that, if we do international and the other types of equities, I mean, your report says they are a little bit more risky. I think we try to mitigate that risk with maybe the index funds or something different so that we're not changing. You said yourself that the current policy is a good policy.
Yes.
And we're stretching for yield is what we're doing.
Well, no, we also are trying to have a better, the overall risk-adjusted return should improve.
Should improve. But we'd be taking a little, just a little bit more risk.
We're taking a little bit more.
We're taking on a little bit more possible volatility or deviation, mm-hmm. but not a lot more risk.
Yeah, I mean, the return that we're getting for that unit of risk.
Should be there.
Yeah.
That's our Sharpe ratio right now is minus 1.04. Sharpe ratio ought to be 1 plus 2 or whatever, which is saying what our manager is doing for us in relation to reaching a risk-free return, a return on a risk-free asset for the risk we're assuming.
Well, it's a lot more complex than I can say I fully understand.
Yeah, no,
I know you do more of it, Leroy.
No, that's fine.
You understand my principle, what I'm saying.
Yeah, and, I hear you.
If
that's not what we're doing, we're not accepting more risk, then fine. I think that's good. But if we're going out and accepting more risk, you're saying we wouldn't be.
What I was saying, I think this really comes back to the thing I said very early on. The biggest risk change is in your stock bond mix.
Right.
And I said, I don't think it's advised to change that to get additional return.
Right. But I know that I sit on a foundation board, mm-hmm. and we have seven managers. One is fixed income, mm-hmm. okay, but it's large cap value, large cap growth, small cap value, small cap growth, international, and so there it's a very variance of mix. Of course, we went up, we've gone down, we've come back. You know, and the numbers. And volatility is obviously everybody's been volatile in this market. But when I look, I think we dropped slightly more, but I think we've also bounced back slightly more. And so when we're talking about risk, I think the fact that it's diversified out like that, I'm not sure the risk is greater because of that. I think that the diversification has made it actually a better to take advantage of the good things as well. So.
Okay, any more questions? And we'll consider this change in policy further. If you have something else, I'm sorry.
No, I don't. We'll come back. Our next scheduled meeting is in October, and we'll talk. We'll work with John, and we'll bring back a recommended policy, either an amendment to this policy or a new draft of the policy, perhaps, at that time frame for y'all to consider.
The fact that it may have
bring you something that you can actually consider as recommended.
Okay, fine. Is there a motion to adjourn?
There is.
Second.
Aye.
Thank you.
Hey, John. What are you talking about?